Hello and welcome to the Inner Bottom Line. I'm your host, Olive Gallagher, and I'm delighted to be with you today. I hope you all had a wonderful holiday, Thanksgiving. And as Christmas zooms towards us, I'm sure you're all very, very busy running around trying to get ready. And so take a break, pull up a chair, maybe even get a pen, because today is going to be a very, very special day. So I'm delighted that you're with me. First, let me give you the call-in number in case you'd like to call in and speak with our guest, Deborah High, today. That number is 929-477-3854. Let me ask you a question. Do you believe in coincidence? Some people call it that, or fate, or destiny. There's a Yiddish word for it. It's called beshert. It means it was just kind of meant to be. I mention that because I was in L.A. all last week, as you may remember. I took a holiday for some meetings and to celebrate Thanksgiving with friends. And I had no idea, given the fact that today's show, as well as next week's guest, had been booked a while back, that a friend would end up taking me to a photography exhibit at the Annenberg Gallery in Beverly Hills, and how timely it would be given today's guest. The exhibit's called Photo Arc, and it features the work of a fantastic artist named Joel Sartori. This amazing photographer, whose work you may know from National Graphic, he's been with them for many years, has embarked on a worldwide odyssey to capture, in the most astounding, up-close and humane fashion, every living creature still alive on our planet. Many of them are on the verge of becoming extinct, and many of them are now only available to be experienced in zoos. And that alone twisted my heart into pieces. Now, I've been known to express, perhaps too often, dismay at my own species. Dismay that we continue to display a stupid sense of arrogance and entitlement in destructive behaviors that suggest that we feel Mother Earth belongs to us, and that we can do whatever we choose. But if we're really honest with ourselves, we'd admit that we're a scavenger-like species, with our heads in the sand far too often or too long, acting out in selfish, even cruel ways, often more intent on power and war and greed than love and compassion. I've always believed that we are just one of millions of species given the opportunity to live upon this planet, and that so go the animals, inevitably so go us. But then there have always been the exceptions among us, the good ones, the brave souls, the courageous, compassionate, giving hearts who do the work, share the love, make the sacrifices, provide the caring, the nurturing, the protection of those creatures in need. And that's why, as Christmas zooms towards us, and we have the opportunity to make it a season focused upon the gift of giving rather than the giving of gifts, that I have the privilege, as producer and host of this show, to invite guests on who are very special and doing such extraordinary things to save this planet and all of its creatures. Now, next week, on December 4th, at our usual time slot, live, Tuesdays at 3, my guest will be Faith Maloney, one of the founders of the Best Friends Animal Sanctuary, a show you do not want to miss. Faith has been a guest on the Inner Bottom Line before. She's an amazing woman, and I had the pleasure of meeting her when I visited the sanctuary several years ago. And together, we'll be spotlighting animals at the sanctuary in Kanab, Utah, who are ready for adoption by you this Christmas. However, today's guest fully is extraordinary, and so it is my pleasure to welcome Deborah High to the Inner Bottom Line. Deborah, along with devoting so much of her time and energy to the clients of her therapy practice here in Portland, gives a large portion of her heart and time to a very magical place, Africa. and a remarkable organization called Wildlife Act. While her devotion and fascination with Africa has been present for most of her life, she has in recent years become involved and spent the last few years volunteering with this group. Also, in the interest of full disclosure, I'm very proud to share with you that Deborah also happens to be my daughter. So, Deborah, welcome to the Inner Bottom Line.
Thank you, Olive. It's a pleasure to be here today. And that was a really moving introduction.
Well, I imagine it did touch your heart, as I know it touches mine, because I know that you grew up with a very deep affinity, almost a gift, a whisper kind of gift, to work with and to speak with animals. Where do you think that comes from? Do you have a sense of that? And I want to take you back and ask you to as part of your first response to my, I know many questions, I always ask questions, you know that, to talk about Africa, because Africa in your life, in my life, in our life, it's a magical name. It's a magical place filled with magical creatures. And as a note, and I'm open the show with the question of coincidence, it also happens to be that this weekend, starting really about now in terms of the time zone, this is the Global Citizens Festival that is beginning right now in Africa to celebrate 100 years of Nelson Mandela. So it isn't by accident, I think, that we're on the show together today. So go back. Do you have a sense of when in your heart, in your life, this fascination with Africa and with its creatures began for you?
Oh, definitely. I think one of the things that I think about going back in years when I was a child is my best friend and I, Sarah, used to make believe that we were National Geographic photographers and field researchers in Africa. That was one of the common kind of make-believe games that we loved to play with one another. And I still remember watching Mutual of Omaha. I can't remember the host. It was a wildlife show, and I just remember getting so excited every time it was on. I think it was on the weekend, and just being absolutely fascinated with the animals, and especially Africa, always have been drawn to it.
Well, you may remember, too, that when you were a very, very, very little girl, and we used to go to the museum every Saturday to look at the paintings, how you were fascinated by the magical African painting by Rousseau with the tiger.
Yeah. Definitely.
And
I do remember.
And, of course, you grew up around a house that was filled with National Geographic. So I guess there you have it. There's the intersect of where that fascination comes from. But I remember you saying something to me when you got off the plane this year, and that was that every time you go back, the first thing that hits you is the magical smell, the sense of being there. What's that like? Can you describe that for our listeners?
It's really interesting. I've described it before as feeling like I've arrived home. And I remember back in the early 90s when I first went to Africa, to West Africa actually, having this uncanny feeling of deja vu all the time. Like
having been there.
I knew that place. I knew the sounds and the smells and the feel of it. It's always been really magical and powerful that way. And in fact, one of the things that happened to me this year is after a very long flight, as everyone can imagine, I was really sort of not in my body, but when I got off the plane, I just started crying. It's like a coming home of sorts. It's very magical in that way.
Now you mentioned that you had gone to West Africa. You went to the Gambia for three.
Yeah.
I think you were there for 3 months, weren't you? Right after graduating from Pitzer College. how did the inception of that trip and your involvement in that, I couldn't quite remember that myself. That came out of Pitzer, or how did that happen?
No, it just came out of a dream of wanting to go and be in Africa. I have no idea, really. It was just me following.
And how did you find the trip?
It's kind of an interesting story, actually, because I had initially signed up with an organization called the Global Exchange Association, but right during that period of time, they lost their funding. Government funding for lots of organizations like that had gotten pulled, and the trip had gotten canceled, and somehow, and I still really don't know how this happened, my application had gotten forwarded to the president of the Gambia, and he actually called me and invited me to come and work on building a youth center with a youth organization that is part of the government that all youth in Gambia have to sort of give service to. He actually invited me to come and work with a group of youth building a youth center in a little community outside of the borders of the main town. So
is that Dar es Salaam?
It was in Dar es Salaam in Bakama. And I still really never learned how he got my application and my essay that I wrote, but he did. And he actually called me. It's kind of a funny story. He called me in my dorm room at an ungodly hour, and my suite mates, I thought my suite mates were just joking with me. I mean, I didn't actually get up and answer the phone right away because I thought they were just teasing me, because they told me this president of the Gambia, which at the time I didn't even know where the Gambia was. I mean, I knew it was in Africa, but I didn't really know anything about the country. I thought it was just a prank. But thankfully, I did actually get up and take the call, and it really was him on the phone. It wasn't him, but it was a representative of him,
of his
office. Reaching out to me. Yeah.
Wow.
So I wanted a presidential visa.
I really completely dropped that, but it was your experience, not mine. So that's remarkable. I don't want to, obviously, you and I could talk forever. We do.
Sure.
But I want to, what I'd like to begin to focus on in the time that we have together today is to share with our listeners, you have always had this amazing gift that I've observed since you were a little girl. You've had this amazing gift to somehow reach out to people and create these magical connections. You do it with people and you do it with animals. And when you decided, the Gambia was one chapter in your life, and we can go back and talk more about that because obviously it was an extremely formative experience for you, as you and I both know, everything from the bus rides to getting malaria. And these are all things that happen to you when you go to another continent, especially a continent like Africa. But this time around, when you reached out to get involved and to go to South Africa to work on a reserve, in only a few years' time, you have created and found yourself participating with an extraordinary group of people. So let's, if we could, focus on Wildlife Act, because what I'd like our listeners to take away from today's show, since we only have an hour, is how can they, with Christmas here, this is a perfect opportunity for anyone listening to give the gift of giving to someone they love by contributing or donating or getting involved in supporting this amazing organization, as well as the Sheldrake Foundation with the rescue of orphaned elephants. There are so many needs. There's so many animals that are in need of protection and help. But Wildlife Act does some amazing things. So tell everyone, one, about how they can do that, but also, what has this experience been like? And I know I'm asking you a lot of questions because then I'm going to step back and just let you go. what is a day like for you? When you get up in the morning, what time do you get up? What do you do? How does it work? I know you get up at 2 in the morning. I know you're out there working basically in the dead of night while we're all sleeping. You're out there working and monitoring and tracking animals and taking care of. Tell people what it's like and tell them about this amazing group of people. And then at the end, how can they get involved and how can they support?
So obviously a lot of questions. Let me just first say that, one of the things that's very important for people to think about is being very selective about organizations that you support and even that you volunteer with, because there are a lot of organizations out there that offer opportunities, sometimes even to have very close and up close personal encounters with the animals that actually are doing a lot more harm than good. One thing I can say about being actively involved with Wildlife Act over the last few years is that I've learned a lot about conservation and the challenges of animal management and how to protect endangered species. It's actually a very complex thing to do, and it is filled with lots of challenges. And I think that's one of the reasons why I have such deep respect for Wildlife Act as an organization. And I can say that they have received a lot of awards for the way in which they operate and their ethical and moral efforts to actually protect and conserve animals in a really amazing way. So let me give a little bit of information. I found Wildlife Act through a third party. So I think of it as just a great deal of luck on my part. The researching of finding an opportunity like the one of volunteering with animals in our ecosystem is really a challenging thing, because there's lots of opportunities out there. You just really want to make sure that anything that you're doing is actually protecting the animals and not harming them. And unfortunately, there are people that operate that are not ethical out there. So a day in the life of a volunteer monitor can vary depending on where you are, but it is early hours and sometimes late hours, lots of work, but it's incredible experience to spend your time using telemetry, which is, I'll explain that a little bit. The animals that are managed by Wildlife Act select individuals, generally the alphas of the animals, are wearing satellite or telemetry collars, which allows us to track their movement and where they are. Now, that sounds easy, but in actuality, even if we have that going for us, it can be rather challenging to find a cheetah or a lion or a wild dog. But it makes that all the more enjoyable when we actually do get a visual on them. So the monitors at Wildlife Act, their main goal is to actually get a visual on animals to make sure that they have healthy condition and are doing well, that they're well fed and that their condition is good. So that's the primary focus of the monitors on the reserves.
It's just that to you, it's sort of like, it reminds me of, I don't know whether you remember, a wonderful comedian that used to be on, 50 years ago, and Ed Sullivan, Senor Wences, he'd say, easy for you, difficult for me. But
yeah,
just to talk about the fact that you, that these animals like a cheetah or a lion would have a collar, but somebody had to put that collar on them, which means that they have to be humanely tracked and then darted so that they're sedated enough that you could put an actual collar on them so that you can then
right.
leave them in the most humane and gentle way without disturbing their habitat or their pride or their family unit. All, what I've just said, I know from so much that I've learned from you and also just from my own experience is just that there's a lot that goes into that. And then there becomes the hard work of tracking them and the numbering and making sure that, that the numbers are intact and that no one's in trouble. And also
right.
that the collars are very, very expensive. So this is a very complicated operation that I don't want our listeners to think that, oh, you put a collar on an animal and then you just watch them. No, no. This is a very complicated and a very costly, very expensive endeavor that people invest their lives in doing all for the sake of making sure that these animals – and also you raised something else that we haven't touched on. But I want to make sure our listeners understand. These animals are on reserves where they're, quote, protected, meaning that they're not just free to roam from, you know, from South Africa to the Serengeti whenever they decide or choose to. They're in reserves where there are perimeters. Am I correct about that?
Yes. Most of the reserves have electric fences.
Okay.
And they also have teams of different individuals that monitor their movement and monitor whether they've gotten out of the reserves, which does happen. Despite the fact that the reserves may have electric fences and barriers, animals, especially the wild dogs, for example, they can sometimes dig under an electric fence and get out. So that's part of the reason why monitoring these species are really important, because lots of issues today really center around humane and human conflict that happens with these species that are known for wanting to roam very large distances.
Yeah.
So
that
yeah.
has to be a huge challenge. That has to be
a huge challenge. It's one of the most challenging things in animal management, I think, today, is the fact that there is not enough space for these species and that they are somewhat confined as to the way in which they can move, which is not natural for them.
Yeah.
And it does present a lot of challenges. And then you also then bring up the subject of
poaching.
Their food sources, well, poaching, of course, but their food sources. So if you have an enclosed environment and then the dogs and the lions and the cheetahs and the leopards are all competing for their food source, you can see
yeah.
why animal management then becomes really important and relevant in making sure that the balance is kept at a level that everybody can survive and be healthy.
And thrive, yeah.
It is
really complicated. We're going to take a very short musical break here, give everybody a chance to get a cup of coffee or stretch their legs. We'll be back in about 3 minutes. Don't go away. And I am actually going to, as everyone who listens to the show knows, music to me is as important as the spoken word. And today I'm going to focus on a South African artist that I adore by the name of Marian Stockley, and this is called Empty Space. So we'll be right back.
Innocent words that were softly spoken. Now I am lost in a world, a broken dream. A lonely place, promises made in love forsaken. No turning back on the road you've taken.
To the Inner Bottom Line. I'm your host, Olive Gallagher, and it is November 30th. Christmas is zooming towards us, so happy holidays, everybody. Welcome back to the show. We have a very special guest with us this morning. It is Deborah High, and Deborah's with us today to talk about her work in Africa, volunteering with a wonderful organization by the name of Wildlife Act. Deborah, tell our listeners, how can they help? What can they do, especially right now for Christmas, to give a gift, to make a donation in the honor of someone? Where should they go online? Is it wildlifeact.com?
Yes, actually, if somebody's interested in making a donation that would support the work that they're doing, the conservation work that they're doing, you can simply go to wildlifeact.com. And on their main homepage, there's a little title that will say what we do. And at the very end of it will be a little tab that says how to help. And there's a donation button. And it will actually prompt you to another page that will allow you to donate in whatever way feels comfortable for you. They have a lot of wonderful programs that they particularly manage and work with, anything from focused on the wild African dogs, the rhinos. They have a fund that helps support purchasing the satellite and telemetry collars, which we spoke about earlier, which is so, which are so expensive and so important to the work that they do. They even have an endangered vulture program that they're working with the vultures and trying to protect them. They're also really struggling right now because there's mass poisonings that happen, and it virtually can wipe out hundreds and hundreds of vultures, as you know, that they're scavengers. And so there's lots of opportunities. And, you know, there are always people that say to me, well, you know, funds are really tight right now, and I don't know if I can help in a monetary way. There are lots of other ways that one can help support conservation. And it can just be through education and outreach. And for me personally, the thing that I love to do the most is to actually give my own service and time to the organization, which makes a tremendous difference. The wonderful staff and people that operate Wildlife Act can't actually do the work that they do without the wonderful volunteers that come and donate their time to work with them. So that's a wonderful way to get involved.
And you've met some amazing people in your work. And it's important that our listeners understand this is universal. This is a worldwide organization that pulls volunteers and people from all over the world. So you've made some wonderful friends and you've met some extraordinary people. Maybe you'd like to share some stories or some insights into some of those extraordinary people. And also, this past year, the year before, I know that you went to South Africa to Port Richards and you were pretty much on one reserve. But this past year, you were on three or four different areas. So you've not only been working with wild dogs and elephants, but you've really moved around this year. What has that growth for you in terms of your involvement been like for you? And what have you taken away with it that you might be able to share and inspire our listeners with?
Well, you know, I think the thing that has been really impactful, and again, I've only been working with Wildlife Act for a little while now, is that it feels very much like a family. I have made some of the most amazing friendships and connections with people from, like you said, all over the world. I've met people from all over Europe, France, Germany, the Netherlands, England, Spain, that are like-minded individuals that really care about the environment and especially care about these endangered species that are so magical and amazing and have so much to teach us. So the people is the draw for me in many ways, as well as the animals. This past year, when I returned to work on the reserves for 6 weeks, I actually worked alongside the same volunteers that I worked with the following year. And it really is a family. We spend all of our time together. We live in very small quarters with one another. And, you know, it's a wonderful way to really connect with people that are like-minded and to build community. And then, of course, there's the animals. I mean, you try not to get super personally involved and invested in them because they are so vulnerable. But you can't help fall in love with the stories about the individual species that you're monitoring. And when something is happening, for example, if the wild dogs get out of the park and we have to bring them, we have to steer them back into the park, or one of the animals gives birth to a litter of puppies, or you see the baby cubs of the lions. I mean, it's just a magical experience. And often we get the information about that particular animal and where they've come from, sometimes their genetic line, and you know, you do start to develop names. For example, this year when I was in Mfolozi, there's a male cheetah who I actually met and worked with on another reserve the following year, and I kind of named him Cheeky Boy because he just is such a bold cheetah. He walks with such confidence and he is just not afraid. And it was amazing.
Well, he's a cheetah.
Yeah, well, true. But I mean, there are some very timid cheetahs actually that are extremely shy and are very hard to track. But not this particular male. And he, it was really amazing to see him in a new environment, on a new reserve, and to see him. I mean, I literally saw him this year after he had only been on the reserve for a few weeks. And I mean, it's, you know, to be moved from one reserve to another and just walk with such confidence was a pretty powerful thing to experience.
Yeah, magical is really the only word for the video that you have of him, I have to admit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's such a privilege. So you are already planning this coming year's trip. Have you made final decisions yet?
Oh, I've already booked my airline ticket. So I'm heading back, and I'm already counting the days, and I'll be on one of the reserves that I was on last year, and one that I haven't been on for a little while, and then a brand new one. So tell us about
those.
Well, I'll be going to Tempe Elephant Park, which is a reserve that I volunteered at last year, just because it's such a magical and beautiful place. It's a sand forest, which is really unusual in and of itself, and it has some of the most majestic bull elephants that are still alive in our world today, especially in South Africa. And it's just a wonderful environment. And then I'll be heading back to Mukuzi, which is a reserve that I went to in 2017. And I'll be returning there for a few weeks. So I'm looking forward to getting back to that particular reserve, because I honestly, that's where I fell in love with the wild African dog, which is
that's the dogs, and that's in near Port Richards. Is that was the first one you went to, wasn't it?
You mean Richards Bay?
Richards Bay. I'm sorry. Why do I say Port Richards? Well, Richards Bay.
Well, Richards Bay is really where the airport is, but the reserves are all throughout Zululand. So, but yes, I was introduced. For the first time in my life to the wild African dogs. I mean, I'd seen them in zoos and whatnot, and I knew about them, but I had never witnessed them in the wild until I went to Mukuzi, and absolutely fell in love with them and their story and their plight, which is they're so vulnerable, and they are often being caught in snares and killed. And in fact, last year I did a fundraiser for Wildlife Act in the benefit of the wild dogs in Mukuzi. Unfortunately, and it's hard to know that this is true, but there are a lot of snares. I mean, that's one thing that is still a really significant problem throughout all of Africa, and in certain places more than others.
Just breaks your heart.
Well, and that's why modern vulnerable species is so imperative, because if we don't monitor them, we can't know that they're in trouble. And that's why Wildlife is such an amazing organization, and the work they do, definitely, absolutely, because I've witnessed it myself, saves life. And you know, it's a wonderful thing to actually feel like you're participating in something that makes a change, you know, makes a difference. And I think that's one of the things that's really special about Wildlife Act. You, being a volunteer, you really get to see exactly where the donations and where your funds go to. You witness it in real time, which is
firsthand.
Pretty spectacular.
Firsthand. Well, let's take another musical break here, speaking of Christmas and your gifts. So everyone listening to the show, again, go to the website for Wildlife Act. And, Deborah, again, what was the button, What We Do? Is that the button that people should go to, What We Do? And then it will lead.
Yeah.
Yep.
Under
it'll
what
take
we
you.
Do, so you. It leads you to a button that says How to Help, and then there's a donation button that you can push, and it'll direct you to a way of giving to the organization and supporting them.
All right, well, let's get you in the Christmas mood with a wonderful song by Eric Benet called I Really Don't Want Much for Christmas. And you know what? Instead of getting a lot for Christmas, give from the heart instead of your wallet. It'll make a huge difference by giving to Wildlife Act instead of buying someone a shirt. We'll be right back. Today we have a very special gift on the show, and that is in the presence of Deborah High, who is an extraordinary woman, also happens to be my daughter. But the reason she's on the show today is because of her amazing life and her devotion to animals and her work in recent years with a fantastic organization in Africa by the name of Wildlife Act. And so the whole idea behind today's show was to give you, the listener, an opportunity as you're making your Christmas list to think about something that I talk a lot about on the show, and that is that giving always, it's about the giving. And if you find in your life that if the arrows are going out towards what is around you, instead of waiting for all the arrows to come in pointed at you, you will find that your life will be so enriched with unexpected treasures. And I think Deborah's life is an example of that. And the work that she's been doing, volunteering, even though it may sound like a small thing, it is such an amazing and priceless gift of giving to others, including creatures in our world, protection and love and devotion and time. Time is so valuable. And we tend to today in our world of total connectivity and extreme disconnection from one another, we tend to lose track of time. But you can give in so many ways in your life. And if you can't give from your pocketbook, you can give in terms of your time and your energy and your devotion. So check out the website at Wildlife Act. And Deborah, welcome back to the show. We have about 10 minutes left. Talk a little bit about what's it like in just a day in the bush. It's not glamorous, it's not fancy, but it is magical. What is that like for you? And of all the experiences you've had just in the last year, I'm sure that there are moments. You talked about Cheeky Boy, the cheetah, that you re-met and watched stride through his new reserve with confidence. There have to be other animals or experiences of watching a group of animals interact that has left an indelible mark on you and your heart.
Definitely. I think the thing about being out on the reserve working with Wildlife Act is just the immense beauty and the immense expanse of space and time. I mean, in some ways, it's a very meditative experience because we get up very early in the morning and we try to locate signals of where certain species are, and we may have targets for that day. For example, we may have a plan that we want to get an eye on a particular animal that's under our charge, so to speak. So we might say, okay, our goal today is to locate this particular pack of wild dogs. And we start by seeing if we can find some type of signal. Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. It's those times when we actually find a signal and we're looking for them and we're anticipating finding them and getting a visual on them that is just an amazing experience. I mean, it's exciting. It can create sometimes some anxiety, but usually good anxiety. And then to actually get a visual on an animal that you're tracking and looking for it's just like the best feeling ever. For example, I mean, one of the things about the African dogs is how amazing it is to actually come upon them out in the wild. They are incredibly social and communicative creatures, and just listening to them twitter and watching their body language and watching them work in their community of alphas and subs and how that goes about, how that plays out. I can't think of anything better than that. And it's truly magical. I mean, it's truly magical to witness them interact and be, you know, be the creatures that they are. And
it almost
just as impressive. Oh, go ahead.
No, it almost sounds. Yeah, I just wanted to pick up on what you just said because the impression that I got when you were speaking was it's almost as if you get to. It's almost, in a way, it's almost in a very healthy way, voyeuristic. It's almost like you're there, but in a way, you're not there because you're not getting in the way of them being wild, being who they are. You're just getting the opportunity to watch and experience that life, which we don't,
yeah.
I mean, we don't know what that is. We only know
yeah.
to go to a zoo and it's all extremely artificial. So is some of the excitement just the fact that you're in it?
Yeah, and I mean, it's that definitely. And I think it is somewhat of a voyeuristic experience, because we really actually do not want to inhibit them in being their wild species. You know, we want them to go about their business and do what it is that they do. And we're simply watching them, recording them, and reporting back. Obviously, for us, we're going to look for things like, do we see a dog that has a snare on it that needs to be addressed? Is there an animal that has some kind of medical problem or injury? Does the animal look like they're well-fed and hunting well? So we are going to look for those things, but ultimately, we're just checking in with them, and we're just watching them, and we're trying to do it with as least disruption as we possibly can. I mean, a lot of people will say, well, do you ever get to touch the animals and, you know, be really close to them? And we only will do that if we need to intervene medically, or there's some type of, like, if an animal is going to be maybe transferred to another reserve. But we don't want to get the animals too comfortable with us, because after all, we are one of the things that is most dangerous to them. When I say we, I don't mean necessarily myself, but humans are dangerous to these creatures. So
you bring up a really important thing, and I thought it would be helpful to our listeners for you to address it, because it's almost like you're damned if you do and damned if you don't. I think that we have this romanticized idea of going on safari and getting close to the animals. And you see these pictures of people riding around in cars and buses or small trucks, taking pictures and chattering away and pointing, sometimes even making fun. I mean, I remember, you're going to remember this from being a child, when we were at the San Diego Zoo, the man that was making fun of the gorillas, and the gorilla got back at him in the most inappropriate way, which was just wonderful, by throwing a handful of poop at him. I think it's important for our listeners to understand that if you decide that you want to go to Africa and you want to experience the country, you want to experience going on, for instance, a safari, it's important for you to understand that as humans, we're coming into their land, and we're there to observe but not to intrude. And so if you are going to be going on this kind of a tour, to be respectful of where you are, because you have mentioned to me, as an aside, behaviors that you've observed in trucks that you've passed or safaris, groups of people who are just behaving really badly. And that's not okay. And as an ethicist, I can't let it go, because I think it's really important to create an awareness in people. Don't fall in love for the wrong reasons. Is that a good way to put it?
No, I think it's very important. I mean, I think one of the reasons that I do promote Wildlife Act to the extent that I do is that they do what they do in a very responsible and ethical way. And, you know, our goal in protecting them is to intervene in the least possible intrusive way as we possibly can, because that actually puts them at more danger, you know, at more risk. And I think there are situations where people do go to Africa and they get involved in things that ultimately do actually harm the animals rather than help them. And so I do think making a decision to participate and the way in which you participate and who you participate with, very, very important. You know, these are wild animals and their boundaries need to be respected. And that goes to say for any animals in nature. it is really important.
Well, any animals, whether it's a domesticated animal, a cat or a dog, or an elephant in a zoo, and you and I have laughed many times over your experiences when you were working at the Oakland Zoo with the elephant. People do the damnedest things, and they think that, again, it goes back to what I opened the show with. It goes back to this almost thoughtless. We're almost... I think a lot of people behave badly. I don't even think they realize they're behaving badly because they just they don't think about it. But
how,
it would be almost like if you reversed it and we were in a cage and animals were driving by and pointing at us and laughing at us and pointing derisively, we wouldn't like it. Well, the animals don't like it either.
True.
And so this sense of mutual respect for both the physicality of it, along with just the energy level, the energistic, the negativity that we're capable of putting out there that is damaging to animals. They feel it. They're smart. Trust me, they're a lot smarter than we are. If they weren't smarter than us, they wouldn't be in the trouble we're in because we're the stupid ones. We're the ones that are making the mistakes. They're the ones that are endangered. So I want to make a comment to our listeners before we run out of time because we only have a few minutes left. First of all, Deborah, thank you so much for sharing your experiences with the Inner Bottom Line today. You're an extraordinary woman. I have deep love and respect for what you do and also who you are and what you represent, the best of what we can be. I also want to point our attention to Wildlife Act. Please go to the website. Give what you can. Even if $5 is a small, you think it's too small, it's not too small because when you put 100 people together, all giving $5, it amounts to something. And today we all know that small little gifts can go a long way. So please do give from the heart. Also take care of the animals, whether they're small or large. It's going to make a difference. And if you can catch this exhibit, this photo arc, I believe there is a show. It may even be on National Geographic about Joel Satori and his amazing photo arc and the work that he's doing. It will really warm your heart. So, Deborah, again, any final words from you before we leave?
No, just thank you for having me. And I guess the only thing I'd want to say is, one person can make a difference.
That's a wonderful way to end the show. Thank you so much, everyone. Don't forget to tune in this coming Tuesday at 3 p.m. with Faith Maloney from Best Friends. We'll be talking more about animals and how you can help. In the meantime, have a good weekend and tune into the Global Citizens Festival that will be on the air for you to participate in this wonderful, wonderful festival of Nelson Mandela. Bye-bye, everyone. Take care of yourself and be good to the people that you love. Bye-bye.